You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Daniel Howitt's interview with the writer and director of She Dies Tomorrow, Amy Simetz, and the actresses, Caitlin Scheel and Jane Addams.
Hi, how's the new house?
Good. Can you come over?
I can't. Are you okay?
I am going to die tomorrow. There is no tomorrow for me.
All right, listen, Amy, I'm really freaking out right now.
I feel like you put this idea of dying in my head. Can you just call me back?
Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk about your film, She Dies Tomorrow. Clearly, it's a very unique film, hard to even put in the box of a single genre. So could you just walk me through how you kind of developed this idea, the screenplay? And where the idea kind of originated.
Sure. It's very much a movie about anxiety and fear of death, and that's very personal for me. And in addition to that, I write for television, so it takes a long time to develop these things. And coming from the world that I came from, which is independent film, I like immediacy. I like things to happen fast. Mm. And I like, as a filmmaker, for that to know that I have control over, like, you know, wielding when I get to do my craft. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I sort of assuage that by acting on things. And I'm very lucky that I get that opportunity as well. But sometimes I'm on sets and I'm acting and I really enjoy it, but I also am like, oh, I really want to get my hands on the camera. I want to be in control.
Right, right.
And so I just sort of hit a point where, like, you know, some of these shows were taking too long to develop that I was like, I have to start shoot something now. And I'm dealing with this anxiety that was like personal outside of cinema, and was like, it's going to be about that. And luckily enough, the people that share the same sort of zest for spontaneity and also independent filmmaking are some of my best friends. Jay Keitel, who's my cinematographer, and Caitlin Scheel and Jane. And I was like, we're going to shoot something. We're going to start it right now. And I mean, with all of my work, I really enjoy playing around with genre and playing around with some of the tropes or some of the, I say tropes, and I feel like there's a bad connotation to the word tropes. Hmm. I think I should start using the word tools.
Sure.
And I really like, in horror or in genre filmmaking, the contract that you make with an audience of like, I'm gonna make you anxious, and we're gonna have a release, you know, and we're gonna have the scares, and it's gonna be cathartic, and you're gonna play around with it. But I also love art cinema, you know? So like, I love horror film and I love art cinema. I mean, all of my influences are horror films, but then also like Barbara Loden's Wanda and Louis Buñuel and Claire Denis and Agnes Varda and Chantal Ackerman, you know? So, and they also, but all those filmmakers, Chantal Ackerman and Agnes Varda and Claire Denis also play around with tools of genre filmmaking in certain aspects, which is why I'm so attracted to their work and why I'm attracted to, like, say, like Josephine Decker's work in addition. Yeah. And so some of the tools that I really wanted to play around with were specifically, you know, the sound design that I love so much in genre filmmaking and how weird it can get, you know, and how it just really pushes the audience into these other sonic atmospheres that, like, you can't really get away with in sort of classic drama.
Sure. You know?
But at the same time, you know, I don't, you know, I do and I don't consider it a horror film. I do and I don't. but that's okay with me.
Sure,
but I do and I don't, but I do think it I was trying to get to something that all horror films were, that always get to, which is talking about death and fear of death. Mm-hmm. And whether you put a monster to that or a ghost or whatever, it's still toying with these ideas. And I thought, what if you know, do something like, I guess, Seventh Seal, you know, mm-hmm. style, where it's just like, it's just death itself, as opposed to a monster.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the impetus of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And did it start more from this idea of wanting to play around with some of these influences, like you were talking about with sound design, more than the idea of the film itself, the quote unquote monster of anxieties, in a sense?
Yeah, I mean it's hard to I'm talking retrospectively, so sure. It's hard to sort of see where they all gel together, you know?
Yeah.
Because all of us, and I want to give everyone that worked on the film credit, you know, including my cinematographer and all the actors. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is like we started exploring visually this feeling that I couldn't put into words. And at first, Jay Keitel and I were shooting this, and I was editing it myself. Hmm. And I want to give Kate Brokaw a shout out, because she's my editor. I'm terrible at media managing, and I'm also left to my own devices. I'll re-edit things like over and over and over on board. So I edited the earlier stuff just to get like a visual language for it about what the feeling was. And she took it over once I realized it was a feature, and she took it over and was magnificent with it. And she also, you have to give her credit for like also sort of giving, like understanding the tone and understanding my sense of humor and understanding the horror at which I was like trying to like explain, that she just intuitively understood it. And so it was such a collaboration with all of these people that it became more than just my anxiety. It became everyone's, you know, everyone sort of like taking it and like and helping me find that vision.
Yeah, absolutely. The visuals of each moment where the characters kind of witness their, you know, their future are beautiful and haunting. What was the inspiration for the look of those sequences, and how did you go about crafting those?
So Jay and I have known each other for 17 years, and when I approached him about doing this with me, it was all about let's push everything just to make something so like just sense like the senses just sort of like, you know, overload in a way. Mm-hmm. And the same conversation I had with my sound designer, Mary Ellen Porto, who I had worked with, both of them, on my second season on The Girlfriend Experience. And she's just so wonderful as well, and like is excited that she gets to push things so far. And if you work in TV or in film, there's always a question of like, is this too far? Is this going to alienate people? Mm-hmm. But when you have the luxury of working with somebody that's self-financing their movie, the answer is no, there are no limits.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so Jay and I were like, is this too trippy? And we would experiment with sort of the ways that it looked. And it really wasn't experimentation. Like there's a lot of times that a lot of days that he and I experimented just in my garage, just me and him, coming up with some of the visuals that are like kind of cut in.
Yeah.
And figuring out exactly how that looked. And a lot of the early days of that stuff was like, we don't know exactly what we're gonna get. But then we with those experimentations with lenses and then all this other visual stuff that I was doing, with like plexiglass and like throwing things on this piece of plexiglass and filming them with these macro lenses, we were able to come up with sort of textures and know how to like control it and knew what worked. And that came with the same thing as like the visuals and the lights. And then just, I mean, that's from our experimentation, but it was trying to get to something I was trying to describe to Jay as to like what I would think a near-death experience would feel like, which would not just be horror or fear, that it was everything all at once, which would be like elation and like sadness and like, you know, confusion in all of these things. And so it was like, it's like being, what we came up with was sort of like the blind, like the blinding of the experience, like the, like light-wise, the blinding of the experience, and then sonically the sort of overwhelming, you know, vibration of what you're experiencing, and probably the flood of thoughts. And it's just like so much to handle, that that's sort of where we came visually, but also sonically with where we were going.
That's awesome. And I definitely, all of those emotions that you listed, I absolutely come across the strange blend of sadness and elation. I think that works really well.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
One more question for you. Just in this weird season, quarantine season, what's been keeping you entertained or inspired? Movies, books, TV, whatever. What are you consuming recently?
There's some embarrassing stuff, Daniel.
Perfect. That's the best.
Early quarantine, I definitely like blew through Love is Blind.
And oh yeah.
And I mean, there's so many people crying and saying I love you. Like,
so it's terrible and just so great to watch.
Couldn't stop. And I was like, how do you, like, why are they crying? Like, and like, you know, and what they really love this person. And like, look, I am somebody that like loves to love, but like, oh my God. And then I of course had to watch Too Hot to Handle because I didn't have enough reality show in my life. And then eventually, I've said this in interviews, and maybe, sorry, it's old hat, I don't have anything new for you, it's just fact. And then I was just like, ugh, I still feel so like icky, because I was trying to take my mind off of it. Mm-hmm. And I ended up watching Afterlife by Ricky Gervais.
Okay.
And I think it's brilliant. I was watching it because I thought I was going to get like this Ricky Gervais comedy, but ended up crying because it's so human and so about loss and his ability to switch back and forth from like pure anguish from losing somebody that you love so deeply to like brutal British comedy is magnificent.
Yeah.
So like, then that set me on the path of like, I have to watch everything. Now I'm done like being surface and I need to watch more stuff. Oh, British Baking Show is amazing. So
right.
It's Queer Eye, but also, and then I really love, but right now I'm obsessed with, I May Destroy You.
Okay.
I watched that and I was obsessed with it. And I watched, Track Down Chewing Gum, her other series.
Yeah.
And then, what else? Oh, for laughter, the dress up gang. Have you watched this?
No, I don't. I'm not sure I know that.
Tim and Eric produced it. It was on TBS.
Okay.
Hilarious. It's so weird. I mean, it's Tim and Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
Producing. They didn't direct it, but it's Tim and Eric producing. So of course, there's a brand of weirdness. But it's so good. And then This Much I Know Is True.
Yeah, yeah.
It took me a few sittings, but that show is brilliant.
Yeah, it's dark. Yeah. It's
very dark. And then Shirley, of course.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not just saying that because of Neon. I'm saying that because I love Josephine Decker's work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I've watched so much. I also want to, and then also early on in quarantine when it was coming out was Eliza Hittman's film, Always, Sometimes. Yeah.
Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. Yeah, I just watched that for the first time.
It's really weird.
Right.
My brain, Adela Romansky, who's one of my best friends, produced that movie, and she produces for me too. She's always like, you start with an A with people when I start with an F. And so it's so funny that I actually say that movie with, like, I start with Always.
Right, right. I'll say it's The Optimist, right? You want to say Always before you say never.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for this film. It's a phenomenal, very unique experience. It's great.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
She could be right.
What?
You're worried about catching something?
Something really bad is going to happen. Did this.
I'm not ready. Katie, thank you so much for joining me, and thanks for your performances in this very unique and excellent movie. I'd just love to know, first and foremost, how you got to the project and what your first impressions of the script were when you first received it. Kate, we could start with you.
Sure. Amy and Jane and I have known one another for a long time, since we worked together in 2008. And we are friends and have collaborated on a number of projects since then. So when Amy came to me with the idea for the movie, and she also said that Jane was going to be involved, it was, there was no question. I was just so happy that she had asked me to be part of it.
I love working with Amy and Kate. And like Kate was saying, we met in 2008. Kate and I were shooting a film with Joe Swanberg in my apartment in the East Village at the time, 66 Avenue A. And when Amy, this time it happened, I knew she was sending me little bits of things she was writing. And then, you know, we were vaguely talking about doing something. And then the Malibu fires happened, and I had to drive downtown and stay at a hotel downtown. So I ended up closer to Eagle Rock. And so Amy called and said, hey, just come over, since you're already over, come over and I'll have Kate and Jay will just shoot you guys with some dialogue I've written. And I just was so happy. It was like, oh, of course, you know, cause Kate and I were talking earlier about, it's kind of like, you know, if somebody invites me to a party or invites me over to shoot a film, even if we don't know where it's going or what the film is going to be, I would rather shoot the film.
And so, Jane, you said Amy was kind of sending you bits and pieces as she was developing the script. What were your impressions of where she was taking this story? Like I said, it's very unique, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when she eventually latched on to the like mind virus idea, I thought that's amazing. And, you know, but we had already shot the scene in the, you know, where Kate's wearing that great sequin dress lying on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
When we shot that scene, we did not know it was going to become about a mind virus.
Wow.
Yeah, the seed of the idea in its very nascent stages was just a woman who is absolutely certain that she's going to die the next day. And Amy never wanted it to be, you know, she never wanted to show a scene of that woman getting a particular diagnosis, and she didn't want it to be a situation where the woman had any sort of agency in her own impending death. So all of that was kind of baked into the original seed of the idea. But yeah, I was very excited when Amy latched on to the idea of it being a mind virus. And I was very excited when I found out that Jane was going to, you know, be infected by this idea that she too was going to die the following day. And that the movie was sort of going to extrapolate from there. Brilliant, and I was very happy that that was the direction that Amy decided to go in.
Yeah, and Kate, as you started to play this character who knows she's going to die tomorrow, how did you prepare to play Amy as she's coming to terms with her death?
Yeah, sure. I feel like Amy Timetz decided very early on that what this character's arc was going to be was that she was sort of struggling to feel the enormity of that she's sort of paralyzed by how momentous it is that she tries to cry and have a breakdown, and she can't quite get there, and she tries to be really moved by a piece of music, and that doesn't work either. I can certainly relate to the feeling of being somewhat paralyzed by anxiety. And I can definitely relate to the feeling of, you know, wanting to have a cathartic experience, but not quite being able to rise to the occasion. Also I would say Amy just, she writes with a great deal of specificity, so she kind of, I don't know, she tells me what to do and I do it.
sure. And Jane, we see your character both before and after she knows her fate. So how did you sort of approach that character shift and the moment where you kind of become infected with this mind virus?
I think I just, like Kate said, I really just let Amy kind of boss me around a bit.
Sure.
And you know, to keep track of the levels, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's Amy's direction.
And so what is it like working with Amy? Obviously you've all worked together before. Tell me what it's like working with her both as a writer of the project and director.
Well, what Cade and I've heard each other talk about a lot is that, you know, it's nice working with Amy also because she's an actress, so she knows what we're doing. So she kind of like lets you, you know, when I say she bossed me around, what I mean is like she can tell me what to do, and then, but she also knows how to let me do it.
Right.
She, you know, she doesn't interfere, or, you know, she's not in her own way, in my way kind of thing. She lets me know what she would like, and then she trust me to come up with that, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Was there a particular moment for either of you that was especially difficult, whether emotionally or finding the right tone for the performance? Anything particularly challenging?
Just finding the right pajamas.
That was a real challenge.
Yeah. Amy has a brilliant assistant named Alex who took care of that. I mean, I knew what I wanted the pajamas to be because I have a similar pair. I need to go get that brand name, but
that's awesome. Kate, anything for you that's particularly challenging maybe?
I feel like it's all challenging to a certain
degree.
Especially for someone that you care so much about, like you just really don't want to mess up their movie. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Kate handled really well balancing a leaf blower on the side of a canyon in Amy's backyard. I thought that was really impressive in an evening gown.
Right.
Blower stuff was fun. It's fun to operate a leaf blower.
That's great. Kate, you talked about how you can definitely identify with the character you played, struggling with anxiety, longing for, cathartic experiences. How about the acceptance also that the character plays? What could you go a little further with the idea of how you related to your character?
Sure. You mean the acceptance toward the end of the movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That scene was difficult to shoot. That certainly is more of a stretch for me in terms of like I personally am not there yet and would definitely struggle to get there. So it is kind of you do some sort of mental emotional gymnastics to try your best to understand what that feeling would be like. But yeah, I mean, Amy creates a really safe environment for actors to kind of take emotional swings, if you will, because you trust that she'll only, even if you're out on a limb, she will only use something that you would feel comfortable with. Does that answer?
Yeah,
totally. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that was great. One last question for you guys. During the quarantine season, what's been keeping you both entertained or calm or whatever the case may be? TV, movies, books, whatever. What have you guys been listening to lately?
I have been listening to a lot of audiobooks while I hike because I can't sit still and watch any more streaming anything.
Sure.
And I can't read books. You know, I can't sit and open a book. I'm just immediately thinking like life is passing me by.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I find having lots of audiobooks, downloading them in my iTunes and then listening to them on my iPod, you know, and walking way back in the hills forever is super helpful.
That's awesome. Any particular books you want to shout out?
Yeah, a few of them are political, so I won't shout those out.
Sure.
By the audience immediately. I like Pride and Prejudice these days.
Nice.
And I also love David Foster Wallace. Like I've been really listening to whatchamacallit. Sorry, I have COVID brain. I'll find it while you talk to Kate.
No worries. Kate, anything you've been kind of watching, listening to, anything like that?
Yeah, I've gone through spurts of, you know, consuming media and things, and then other periods of time where it's just I haven't really been able to concentrate very well. But I'm reading Shock Doctrine right now, and then I'm just recently catching up with The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys, Infinite Jest is what I couldn't
right.
recall the name, but then also The Pale King. Particularly The Pale King right now. I recommend.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Kate and Jane, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for this film. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Daniel Howitt's interviews with the writer and director of She Dies Tomorrow, Amy Simetz, and two of the film's stars, Caitlin Scheel and Jane Addams, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and also on Spotify. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.